when people talk about change and OR, huge direction change, you know, with between the Black Album and Load, I think there was quite a bit more of a change between the Justice and the Black record.
Absolutely. Right.
Bob being there was kind of like another band member that you could trust. You could trust this guy. I mean, it took quite a while. You know, by the time we got to Reload, we trusted him completely, but...
It isn't based on a lot of like cartoonish kind of images that a lot of heavy metal bands did have at the time also. The demand for us just increased, and I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that you could take us seriously. We weren't just cartoon characters, you know.
Friends, this is James from Metallica. You're in the studio.
Welcome back in the studio. I'm Kirk from Metallica, and you're with Redbeard.
Throughout the 80s, the San Francisco 49ers NFL football team created a dynasty, winning 3 Super Bowl victories. In the decade that followed, the Bay Area foursome known as Metallica dominated the rock world with a trio of high watermark albums. The precedent was first set by their 1991 masterpiece, affectionately known as the Black Album, which has never stopped selling to this day. After a stunning, memorable live performance on the prestigious 1992 Grammy Awards telecast, Metallica won their 3rd Grammy for the Best Hard Rock Heavy Metal category. By the time a particularly prolific 94-95 writing session had prepared them for their next studio album, Metallica singer, lyricist James Hetfield, guitarist Kirk Hammett, drummer Lars Ulrich, and bass player Jason Newsted had cranked out no less than 27 new songs. When Metallica entered the legendary Plant Studios in Sausalito in May 1995, the obvious idea was to release these 27 songs as a double album called Load. But a last-minute decision to split it into equal-strength single albums to release Load while holding another album back turned out to be marketing genius for Metallica. The 91 Black Album success in broadening Metallica's appeal from cult to mainstream, furthered by Load's songs, was due in large part to Metallica's collaboration with producer Bob Rock, whose sonic impact was not subtle. Here's Metallica's James Hetfield.
There's muscle to it, and that's what we had been lacking before. We were always sticklers for sound, but Bob added just a thickness to it, you know. We were afraid of the bass, because my guitar was kind of the forefront of all, you know, the riff. And, you know, if you don't have a good riff, you don't have a song. Here's the riff and here's the guitar, so loud. And my sound was so, so wide on the spectrum that every time you added some bass, it would suck some of my low end away. So we were really afraid of bass. And Bob really was good at mixing in the bass with the guitar. You know, I gave up maybe a little bit of low end for some, you know, some bigger bass, but the guitar, maybe it got a little more compact in its area, you know, and on the spectrum analyzer, you know. As far as putting these things together, you know, we really had a lot of fun with production and things like on the Unforgiven, and there were times for space, and then there were times for some new sounds. You know, we had just started experimenting with different, you know, different guitar sounds, but also different clean sounds, different keyboard things and whatnot. You know, it got really fun, and the other part was, which was great. Bob, you know, was a guitar player, you know, in the Payolas and, Rockhead and things. And so it was kind of great to have a singer guitar player there, you know, especially for myself. Was singing wise, he helped immensely, you know, me kind of loosen up and not be so, try, you know, singing a little bit like on Nothing Else Matters, or, you know, try some ad libs. And it became a little looser. It was a lot more fun to actually sing in the studio. Before, it was like a chore. I got to go in and, you know, yell for, you know, hours to get these songs. You know, they need lyrics. But this was actually singing the songs. It was a lot of fun.
We'll be right back.
from Metallica's 1996 Load album, that's Ain't My Bitcha. Struggle, tragedy, and being rock's bastard child had all molded Metallica to be insular and distrustful of outsiders. Thus, it took many years and 5 albums before Metallica even allowed an outside producer in the form of Bob Rock. Here's James Hetfield, followed by Kirk Hammett, of Metallica.
Yeah.
What? There was a little intimidation on both sides. You know, he was a little intimidated coming in saying, well, these guys have never had a producer and, you know, I've heard they're mean and their songs are angry and this and that. And boy, I don't really want to tell them what to do. And boy, should I suggest this? He would keep things back, you know.
Can you blame him?
No. But we didn't help him too much. We were, he called me Dr. No, because everything was, you know, he'd say, well, how about this? No. You know, it's not, you know, as soon as he'd open his mouth, no would come out of mine, you know. I still had some blinders on, and I, you know, we got to do it this way, you know. And I was, that came with probably a little, I guess, inconfidence in myself, you know. So I think now we're a little more open to, we'll take in a suggestion, and then. Then say no. At least contemplate it.
Bob had this term after working for us or working with us for like 2 or 3 months in the studio. He had this term called the Metallica brow, which was every time, you know, he'd ask us a question, all 4 of us would start frowning, and he'd say, "Uh-oh, Metallica brow." I'm getting the Metallica brow again. Yeah. You know, he'd suggest something, you know, in like, you know, a solo or something, and I'd just sit there and start frowning, and he'd say, "Oh, Metallica brow, he's thinking." It's kind of funny after a while. But yeah, there was a lot of headbutting, and there's a lot of tension. And, you know, the farther along the album got, the more the tension kind of just, like, built up. But, you know, I at the end of the day, if that's what we had to do to get this album out, you know, that's what we had to do.
There's always been tension on all the records, and tension and competition and all that is good.
Yeah.
This is great
definitely.
For us.
It's healthy.
There was just another guy in there, in the mix.
Yeah.
A new victim.
Someone else to argue with and scream at and get screamed by and whatever.
Where do I take this pain of mine? I run, but it stays right by my side. So tell me.
Still stains me, so wash me until I'm clean.
With just a hint of whammy bar twang from guitarist Kirk Hammett, that's Metallica from the Load album with Until It Sleeps. Kirk thinks that producer Bob Rock gained Metallica's trust in part because he was musician Bob Rock.
Yeah, it was definitely great that he was a guitar player because he kind of he pushed me in ways that I've never been pushed before. He pushed all the right buttons and really would either inspire me or piss me off, but, you know, would get good results either way. And I remember being kind of like stuck for ideas, as one will be in the studio. And he would suggest to me to play, you know, a certain thing, like, you know, that one Jeff Beck lick on Beckola, the second track on Beckola. You know, he could reference certain tracks that I would know about, and he would suggest that maybe I should go for a similar type of feel. And, you know, we kind of established a sort of dialogue where we can go back and forth, and he could accurately suggest to me what type of feel to go for. By just referencing, you know, other types of guitar players or other types of music. And, you know,
that's common ground.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So
that's
now you have a musical dialogue, right?
Yeah, and, you know, that was the first time that I'd ever worked with anyone on that level. It again, that was really, really inspiring.
We'll be right back.
lyrical nod back to Enter Sandman. That's King Nothing from Metallica's 1996 release, Load. Coming up next, Metallica's James Hetfield and Kirk Hammett discuss how Metallica has avoided the traps that befell other heavy metal bands on their way to the top. I'm Redbeard, and you're in the studio for Metallica's Load.
Hey friends, this is James from Metallica, and you're in the studio.
Welcome back in the studio. I'm Kirk from Metallica, and you're with Redbeard.
Metallica was careful to avoid heavy metal cliches that made other bands easy to dismiss as death-obsessed or cartoonish. Here's Kirk Hammett, followed by James Hetfield of Metallica.
You know, I think it has a lot to do with substance. You know, a lot of these bands don't have much substance. So when they're put on a pedestal, all that substance is sucked out immediately. Whereas, you know, Metallica, I'd like to think we are a band with quite a bit of substance. You know, there's a lot more there than just four guys, you know, playing instruments. And we're continually contributing to that substance that is Metallica. And basically what it is that, you know, the well hasn't run dry for us.
Well, that's for sure.
And there's just a lot there. And a lot more to be known, you know, because we're constantly contributing to what Metallica is.
Sure. I think a lot of those bands fall because they allow the fans to control them. They're doing this for the fans, you know, and then, well, when the fans are done with them, you know, what are we? We've got nothing, you know. Wow, you know, I wrote that fan, you know, that song because that fan wanted to hear that, you know. We're not afraid to say we're selfish, and we are here playing this stuff for ourselves, and it's always been that way. That's how we formed this band. You know, we didn't want to work at Burger King, you know, across the street. We wanted to play music, and fans are very good at trying to take control of bands, and we have always had the FU attitude, but there have been a lot of fans that joined up with that. Oh, great, you know, they're battling, you know, authority or something else. And then when it comes down to, well, I really don't like that song, you know, or don't play that song.
Or how dare you look that way or dress that way.
Exactly.
Do that video or whatever.
And then they find out that really we do have the FU attitude, and it's actually directed towards them at that point, you know. And that we really are here for our own gratification most of the time. But it is great to see that fans can understand that. They let you grow. I know there is a lot of comfort and, you know, just familiarity, you know. When you buy an AC/DC album, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get, you know, kind of the same riffs with some different lyrics, and there's a lot of people that need that comfort, you know. We're into having the nuts to go try something else, you know, and to move on and keep ourselves satisfied as musicians.
Oh, what a nation.
That's Metallica's Hero of the Day from the 1996 album Load. Another one of the most detrimental aspects of heavy metal's history is the tendency for its fans not to simply embrace their favorite metal bands, but to consume them voraciously until they're used up in extremely short careers. Metallica's Kirk Hammett and James Hetfield have a theory why their band has not only survived, but indeed grown enormously over a career.
A lot of it has to do with the fact that our music is very, very mature sounding and very responsible sounding, and it isn't based on a lot of cartoonish kind of images that a lot of heavy metal bands did have at the time also. And a lot of people picked up on that, and it got to the point, like, as James was saying, you know, that the demand for us just increased. And I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that, you could take us seriously. We weren't just cartoon characters, heavy metal cartoon characters.
Yeah, there wasn't the Satan, references and the spikes and all the, the comedy of it all.
Sex, drugs, rock and roll kind of stuff.
This was more honesty. This was us, musicians playing the style of music that we felt from the heart. It's a combination of honesty, selfishness, and therapy for us, all this is, really.
Yeah. Sincerity, too. We're very sincere.
Open door so I'll walk inside. Close my eyes, find my place to hide. And I shake as I take it in. Let the show.
Up next, Metallica's James Hetfield and Kirk Hammett answer detractors who got spooked by some playful publicity photos of the band on the Load album cover. I'm Redbeard, and you're in the studio with Metallica's Load.
Hey friends, this is James from Metallica, and you're in the studio.
Welcome back in the studio. I'm Kirk from Metallica, and you're with Redbeard.
With the Load album, some rock critics and earlier Metallica fans who preferred to keep the band trapped like a caged wild animal started accusing Metallica of selling out for fame and fortune. Now, since the music on both Load and its follow-up Reload was unassailable, these detractors could only point to cover photos of Metallica band members sporting haircuts and different wardrobes. James Hetfield of Metallica refuses to be defined by anybody other than themselves.
We've heard sellout since, you know, you mentioned Fade to Black. That was our sellout, you know. Oh, they've sold out completely. You know, they did a, you know, they did a
something
a
with melody.
Oh,
yeah.
Horrible.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I mean, with
we've heard that every album. And people, you know, a lot of people do understand that, you know, that doesn't mean sellout. Sellout means you're actually writing a song for somebody else. You're conforming to what they need. And really, we do respect and take care of our fans, and they do likewise. There's a mutual respect. We've got plenty of things set up, you know, fan clubs and meet and greets and things where we actually treat them as humans and they do us. You know, it's not we're on a pedestal or they are. You know, we're level there. When people talk about change, you know, or huge direction change, you know, with between the Black Album and Load, I think there was quite a bit more of a change between Justice and the Black record.
Of course,
absolutely.
Right. Of course, you're right.
Absolutely.
And but Bob being there was kind of like another band member that you could trust. You could trust this guy. I mean, it took quite a while. You know, by the time we got to Reload, we trusted him completely. Yeah. But we wanted someone to take the producer's seat. So Lars and company can actually sit down and play and not worry about what it's going to sound like running back and forth in the studio and how was that take? How was this? And it's like, you know what? You're a musician. Just play. Let Bob give us a thumbs up or thumbs down. We needed someone that with an ear we could trust.
As Metallica's lyricist, James Hetfield has posed serious questions in their songs about politics, violence, drug abuse, mental illness, even retribution. But James tells us why he stops short of providing the answers as well.
There is a comfort in knowing that someone else has the same question that you do. Yeah, it's up to you, my friend. There is a lot of bands that, or a lot of people, you know, popular figures that love to stand up on the pedestal and give you answers. And here's what I support this. And I, you know, you must, you know, give money to this charity because I say so. And you know, I'm saying so because I'm popular. That's why you should, you know.
It's bully pulpit thing, you call it, yeah. Why don't you?
Well, I'm just kind of aiding the confusion, really. I'm just getting the questions out there to people that when you, I mean, it's actually, I don't know, kind of in a therapeutic way, it's better to ask someone a question than and have them answer it themselves than to tell them the answer, you know? And, you know, instead of here's a fish, here's the fishing pole, you know, you go do it yourself, which will help you later on, you know, in life. So without getting too deep into this, it's always been a think for yourself attitude in this band. And whether, you know, it comes to destroying Long Beach Arena or, you know, killing, you know, your family because you read No Remorse, it is a think for yourself world that we live in. Most of the rest of the states isn't that way, unfortunately. But I think, you know, if people did take responsibility for their own actions, there would be a lot less crap out there.
There isn't one person who has all the answers. And, you know, collectively, our music says that, you know? You can't go to one person and expect that person to have all the answers. Because it just isn't possible. It isn't humanly possible. But it is possible to inspire people and to make people address the situation themselves and, you know, to find the answers for themselves, which is basically, you know, what the lyrics say a lot of the time.
I'm digging my way. I'm digging my way to something. I'm digging my way to something better. I'm pushing to stay. I'm pushing to stay with something. I'm pushing to stay with something better. We'll be right back. digging my way to something better. I'm pushing to stay. I'm pushing to stay with something. I'm pushing to stay with something better.